Welcome to Reimagine Hybrid Work, a Data for Betterment Foundation podcast. I'm your host, Maribel Lopez. I'm the founder of Lopez Research and the nonprofit, the Data for Betterment Foundation. The foundation's mission is to help individuals and companies prepare for the future of work by understanding how technology will change business and careers. If you like this episode, please visit reimaginehybridwork.com for links to follow the show on your favorite app, and subscribe to our weekly newsletter for additional show content and articles. You can also find me on LinkedIn and Twitter at Maribel Lopez and my blog on lopezresearch.com. I hope you'll enjoy the show. Hello and welcome back to the podcast. I'm joined here with Dustin DeVries. He is the CTO and co-founder of Caffeine Interactive Technologies and a technology consultant. Dustin, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm really excited to have you here. Now, I'm sure that most people can envision what a co-founder is, so they're probably quite familiar with that, but they may not be as familiar with what Caffeine Interactive Technology is. Can you briefly describe what your company does and what your personal responsibilities are today?
Yeah, we basically work with other businesses to solve the problems they have using software. So it could be anything from website development to web and mobile app development and support. So we're basically a software agency.
Got it. Makes sense. One of the reasons I wanted to speak with you is I think that, you know, we're talking a lot about hybrid and distributed work, and many companies are struggling with how to run a team in this type of work environment. And you have been running a team in a remote work environment for some time now. Any tips on how companies can do this? And, you know, does it differ in your mind if it's full-time remote versus hybrid? Or how are you thinking about management in 2022-2023?
You know, I think just to speak generally to the average person out there running a business, I think it really depends on your business. I mean, I know some companies that they really thrive with everyone being in the same place under the same roof and being able to do powwows and stuff. And so, you know, if that's your company, embrace it. I don't think you should necessarily try to turn from that. Obviously, you have to adapt. People have had to adapt. Maybe some expectations have been set. The employees, I know companies who maybe you're having to balance that situation of they prefer everyone to be in an office, but they also recognize that an expectation's kind of been set with employees in this day and age that, you know, there'll be some level of work from home, or if they don't offer that, then they can't be as competitive in terms of hiring. And so I think it's all about balancing that out. I think the other thing too is just recognizing both as employers and employees where your strengths are. You know, I have a lot of respect. You know, I've got one friend of mine who comes to mind who he goes in every day and was going in every day to the office during the pandemic. And he recognized that he wasn't nearly as efficient working from home. And, you know, I always thought that was really cool. Kind of applaud him for recognizing that, where a lot of people would say, well, I'd prefer to work from home. You know, I feel better. I have more time, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of good reasons to work from home, but you know, just embracing what works best for you and your business. And, you know, there's a lot more details than that we can go into, but just my high level, that's what comes to mind.
Yeah, I like where you're going with it, because I do think that I've seen very different companies. I mean, some companies, you don't have a choice because it's just the nature of the role. It's an in-person role. Other companies are sort of struggling with, they have a lot of people that maybe worked very far from the office and don't want to go in. But I love the point that you've just brought up, because I do think we forget about that one. And that's that, you know, for some people, the work environment is a more focused environment. There's less going on around them when they're at work than there is at home. The distractions are different, right? And yeah, we have to acknowledge and respect those distractions. The thing that's been a little weird for me lately as I think about this is that in many cases, the work environment feels very different when people go back into the office now. I've visited quite a few clients recently, and a lot of it felt like ghost towns because there just weren't any people in the building. So I can really have a healthy appreciation for the, hey, there's no vibe or energy here. So how do we make that happen?
Yeah, that's a tough situation. I mean, you have to think about that. It's not just what do your employees want. And if you're in a competitive space where it's hard to hire and retain employees, thinking about what the employees that you have want, but also the ones who are like more inclined to go into the office, like how do they feel? You know, a lot of them maybe have a chip on their shoulder. Like the guy I was mentioning who was going to the office every day, you know, talking to him, he kind of did, you know, confide in me and say he sort of has a chip on his shoulder. Like all these other people are working from home and no one wants to go in the office. And it's like, okay, well, are they doing it because they actually feel like they're more productive? Or are they doing it because it's more balanced with their lifestyle? And as employers, you know, ultimately we're in business to make money and the whole organization thrives and everyone's able to get paychecks and get bonuses and everything else because the company's doing well. And you can't sacrifice that just because of people's lifestyle needs. You got to balance all that together. And I think that's what makes this really tough. It was maybe more clear. I actually wish everyone would go back in the office, be quite honest, for me, because I've always worked from home since like 2013. It was nice being able to go to lunch and not have to fight as many crowds and, you know, go do different things, travel, do fun things and not have the crowds you have now because everyone's remote. I think it's a good thing overall for people, but yeah, everyone's got to decide what works best for them.
So have you always been managing a remote team?
Yes. Yeah. From day one. In fact, like for us, the whole remote thing was sort of an advantage for us because we went out of the gates just saying all of our employees will be remote. We actually did have an office for a couple of years. It was just for like two or three of us here in the Austin area that would go into that office every day. And the rest of the team was still distributed and finally decided, no, I don't really like working in office myself. I feel like I'm more efficient, more productive. And being a business owner, you know, most business owners, we don't really have a strong break between our work day and our leisure time. There's always our phones going off, you know, client needs something or whatever. So I'm like, well, I'm already sacrificing so much of my lifestyle being interrupted with work. Why don't I just go ahead and work from home? And it's worked out really well for us. But now it's not as competitive, or, you know, it's more competitive for us because we used to be able to offer that remote environment. Now everybody that's doing the kind of work we do is largely working remotely. So that's no longer one of our unfair advantages, as I used to call it.
One of the things, aside from the unfair advantage of being able to have remote work back in the day when people talked about it but didn't really do it, I believe there's a big difference that organizations are struggling with now in terms of understanding how to value and assess if employees are working. You know, it used to be very much it's a bottoms and seats kind of thing, and if they were there for 8 hours a day or 10 hours a day, they were working. And now that has been taken away, I think a lot of managers are struggling to figure out how do I actually manage and metric and understand the business. If you started with a lot of people being remote, did that mean that you had to have far more defined goals for each individual, or how did you think about management and that structure?
Definitely. I think we had to be more intentional about that for sure. But I think it's, you know, just because someone's in, like, I think back to my own experience of working in office and I'm like, all right, on a given 8 hour day, you know, there were days certainly I worked longer than that, but just say 8 hours a day, how much of that was actually productive time for me? Cause I spent a lot more time in meetings. I spent a lot more time people coming by my desk, either asking me a question, distracting me from things, or, you know, sometimes just wanting to talk about what other random topic comes up, water cooler kind of talk, right? And so, you know, I have to think about the fact that, well, okay, while working from home gives people more freedom and flexibility and they can take advantage of it, it also means they maybe have less distractions. So for me, it actually worked out where I was way more productive working from home. And I think for a lot of people, the right personality types, I think it works out well for them too. There's certainly tools out there that can do it. I know some of our competitors that hire employees, especially if you're hiring like offshore employees, there's even, you know, services like Upwork where you can actually, as you hire employees, you can set it up to have like screen monitoring software that follows everything they're doing. So when they're on the clock, you can see if they have Facebook up or they have like, you know, software code they're writing, you know, you can see all that, which I think is just way over the top. Like, I think if I've reached a point in a relationship where I've got to install something like that on someone's computer in order to be able to make sure that they're working, like that's already a relationship that's soured to the point that it's probably not salvageable. I get why people do it. I just think that for us, I think it's more about you know, we're hiring skilled, talented people. And I think that the expectation is on the goals that are set and that they're going to meet those goals. And we're not going to sit there and micromanage them. We're just going to set the goals of here's what you need to get done this week. Here's your goals for the month. Here's your goals for the quarter, and make sure that they're, you know, thriving. And that's really all we can do.
I really appreciate that. There is a trust aspect that I think we're talking more about in organizational structure. And you brought up some interesting technology changes, such as a screen monitoring software. Are there any other interesting changes you're seeing in the technology landscape that people should be aware of as it relates to management? You know, that was one example of maybe that was a little more negative, but are there other things people should be looking at?
You know, this is something that I feel like as a business owner, I could do a better job with, to be quite honest, if I'm just being completely transparent. I think, you know, one of the things that is top of mind for me is objectives and key results, OKRs. There's a great book. I can't remember the name of the book offhand, but I just read it here in the last couple of months. And well, it was enlightening to think about if you're already familiar with like key performance indicators, tracking KPIs in your organization. To me, OKRs are kind of like KPIs with some sort of direction attached to them. So, I think that works really well just for tracking. And, you know, it's not really necessarily a technology innovation. There's no OKRs. I mean, there are OKR software solutions, I'm sure. But I think to me, more than anything, it's just having that ability to set those goals. And from a technology side, I mean, we use tools like Slack for communication. I think that's become pretty standard within a lot of organizations, whether it's Slack or Microsoft Teams or some people even use Discord. There's a lot of different options there for the real-time communication. And I think more importantly, though, as you embrace any of these new technologies, is realizing the place for them. You know, it's really easy to set up Slack and say, okay, well, now we can have real-time communication with our organization, not have to depend on email and not have to depend on people pick up the phone and calling each other. But then you can end up spinning. Slack becomes a new water cooler at times, right? So you got to be careful about that. So just embrace these things. They're great tools, but they, you know, need to be limited, and you need to be aware of the downsides, I guess.
Yeah, I think one of the things when you have multiple channels for communicating with people, it has some opportunity to take away, say, email fatigue, or it just has the opportunity to add another channel. They send you an email, they send you a Slack, you're like digitally stalked, so to speak. So.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yes, I totally agree.
Yeah. Yeah. But having said that, I do think that one of the interesting things that I've always figured is if I were in a larger company, I think I'd want to have people set profiles that basically say, this is my preferred communications method. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm an email person, I'm a Slack person, I'm a whatever, you know, because yeah. I do think it's, you know, it, for me, SMS is really good. It's a great way to reach me if you have my mobile number. Mm-hmm. If you leave me a voicemail, I might get it 2 weeks later. So there's definitely some interesting changes in dynamic, but everybody has a different way that they like to respond. So I think that's another thing we've been discussing with companies is trying to figure out, is there a universally accepted culture for how you communicate, or is it just you figure it out ad hoc with each and every individual? So we'll see how that one rolls out.
Yeah, and even the different types of ways, you know, so there's what is your preferred communication, but for different circumstances, right? Because like for me, when I was working a full-time job in the office, you know, 9 to 5 every day, like the real-time communication was someone stopping by my desk and interrupting. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I guess you can say, well, I'm busy right now. Can you come back later? But if it's over something like Slack, then at least I can say, you know, it feels like you're not blowing them off, or, you know, it doesn't feel as insensitive maybe, or, you know, I don't know what word I'm looking for, but, you know, like,
you're not stiff arming someone at your desk. Really hard. Yeah.
So, you know, things like that, that's a really good point. And there's times for me, I know when people ping me on Slack, we use Slack a lot within our company. If people send me things and I'm like, well, I don't really have a good way. You know, you just sent me something that really results in a task I need to take care of. I need to make sure that I process this thing that you just sent me with a Slack message. So I know in Slack, there's like there's a capability of you can say mark a message as unread and then get back. But it bugs the crap out of me. Look at my phone and say I've got an unread message. You know, I'm always want to clear that counter. So you know, I think that's a really good point. There's times when I think it would be much better if people would ping me over email, because then email is like a queue that I batch process, you know, periodically throughout the day, and I can go pull out my action items from that and track them, you know, my to-do spreadsheet or whatever. And so that's a really good point. I guess that's, you know, my way of saying I agree with you.
So when you think about how communication has maybe changed with your customers or your employees, are there big differences that you've seen since the pandemic?
Yeah, I think I feel like probably the biggest thing is people definitely feel more comfortable with Zoom, as we all know. But more importantly, I think more people are comfortable with video calls. I think it was always sort of one of these things where you get on a call and like most everyone have their camera off. We still struggle with that within our organization. Everyone, we have internal meetings and not everyone wants to turn on their camera. And I've thought about, should I try to incentivize this? But then there's the other side of like, well, what if you really don't like being in front of a camera and your employer is constantly bugging you about turning on your camera? Is that a good enough reason to go find another job? Stuff like that. So like all these concerns come up, but that's, you know, internal personnel. But with customers, I think definitely more embracement of like being technology savvy, knowing how to get on Zoom, being able to get on, turn on their webcam. And, you know, it's like, I'm surprised that we can, that people can drive past each other on the freeway going 70 miles an hour each way, 140 miles an hour combined speeds, passing each other within like 3 feet and not having wrecks all the time. And I'm surprised like how many people now are able to get on Zoom calls and connect in and turn on their video and not have any problems. You know, it's kind of the same, thing. Like, I don't have enough faith in humanity. Maybe I should have more faith because people have figured it out.
Yeah, it actually works out great. I remember years ago, I used to want people to have a video call because I thought we could do that instead of the, I'm going to spend 4 hours in the car for a 1 hour meeting. And it just wasn't a thing. And now it is. And I'm really grateful that it's a thing now because it really changes how we feel about which meetings have to be in person or that you have to fly to or what have you. So how do you manage your workday, your personal life, a team? Yeah. How do you think about things differently today?
Well, I think it's a constantly evolving thing. I mentioned the OKRs concept earlier. Like, that's something we're just starting to embrace within our company. And that's, I think, going to be a new kind of mindset in terms of how we manage our day-to-day stuff. For me, you know, I think I try to keep normal office hours and have separation from work. I think I've gotten pretty good the last few years of disconnecting over the weekends. Doesn't mean I don't check anything at all, or if something urgent comes up, I'm not jumping in. But you know, finding that separation. Yeah, another big thing for me, I think one of the best books I ever read was The One Thing by I can't remember his name now, the Keller Williams guy.
Yes, I read that.
Yeah, and that really resonated with me because I started realizing that it's what you do every day that impacts how successful you are, your weekly, monthly, quarterly, annual, 3 year, whatever, you know, extrapolate out. It's like you have to make those, make that commitment each day to do the things you need to do to move you and your organization forward. So that's something I've really embraced myself. I haven't really found a way to extrapolate that out to the rest of my team. Maybe that's something I should do, but I think for me, it's more about just if I'm at the head of all this, trying to figure out where we should navigate as a company, if I can do my part in setting my one things, well, typically that all kind of, you know, scales down to the rest of the organization. So if my big focus is on increasing sales and I'm thinking about different types of campaigns we can run, well, obviously that's going to impact the objectives that I give, you know, to my marketing and sales team, for example, right? And then maybe that gets translated over in OKRs to kind of tie that concept in. But now, using a lot of that, but I think for myself, though, just making sure that I'm being efficient, because if I'm being efficient and focused on the right things, then that means that hopefully the rest of the company can do the same.
So the one thing is Gary Keller.
Yeah, Gary Keller.
Jay Papasan. And it's a really simple but powerful concept. And when you think about it, there's essences of that concept in Atomic Habits as well. And
great
it's
book.
Basically just, you know, one thinking of like, well, if I remove this one obstacle or if I did this one thing a different way, you know, how would it impact the whole the whole totality of my life at some point, right? It's like small little changes can really have great results. I also read the 5 a.m. Club. That's a fun read. You really get to the meat of the book, like well into it, but it was sort of an entertaining one, and that also has some elements of that. So there's lots of interesting ways we can think about not just creating productivity, because sometimes I think we get hung up on productivity more so than understanding how to do the right things effectively, back to your OKRs discussion. So that's something that I've been thinking about more and more, is not just how do I do more things, but how do I do the right things and how do I discover those? So,
yeah, I totally agree. Yeah. I mean, that's so important. I think there's so many people that get into business for themselves, become entrepreneurs, and you have to kind of like shed this mindset that I think most employees have, which is that if I'm logging in each day and I'm working hard, I've punched the clock and I've, you know, checked off some things, I've moved the ball forward. You know, it's like more of an emotional feel thing. Like, I worked really hard today. So that means, like, you know, hard work means, you know, good results at the end of that. Well, not necessarily, because it's got to be smart work. You know, if you're working on the wrong things, if you find yourself constantly ignoring the client that you need to call, or, you know, the prospect you need to call to close the deal, because, and you're going to focus instead on, you know, the other things that come across your plate, putting out fires or whatever, which, you know, in your mind you can think are more important, but then you're not moving your company forward. You're not closing on deals that maybe are sitting out there. And I think that, you know, this happens all the time. I'm super guilty of that. It was such a big block for me at my company and my growth as a manager, of getting distracted with other things. And I had to get really intentional. That's where the one thing really filled that gap for me and some processes I built around it. So
fabulous. Yeah. So you were actually just starting to touch on it, but I was wondering if you had any career advice you'd like to share with the audience.
Career advice. I guess it depends on, you know, what you're doing. I don't know. I'm laughing because I think in my mind, I tend to be a little too pessimistic sometimes about these things. Like, I always hear these people say, like, find something you love and then you'll never have to work a day in your life. And I'm like, okay, I don't think the things that I love, if I had to do them every day, I would no longer love. I would get sick of it. It would just eat at me. It would grind on me, you know? So I may not be the best person for that, but I think, you know, there is some element of finding things that you're good at, thinking about, you know, what is your goal, right? Because I think everyone has different goals. Sometimes your goal may be you want to make a lot of money. Like, in my 20s, I was all about, I want to make a lot of money. I want to move up the ladder in my company and do all these things. And by the time I hit my early 30s, I was like, you know what? I don't think I care about that as much anymore. I had a conversation with a friend of mine. We're talking about this. And, you know, he basically said to me, what would you do if you could make half of what you're making now? Is making a pretty good engineering salary, make half of what you could make now, but you complete control of your life and have complete freedom and flexibility. It's like, yeah, I'd take that in a heartbeat. You know, so you need to, I think everyone needs to kind of think about that. Like, what is it you really want? And what do you want now? But also, what do you want in the future? You know, that, because that's going to change. You know, as you go through different phases of your life, you're going to find there's other motivations, and just being flexible with that. And then, you know, not being afraid to try different things. And if it doesn't work out, you know, you can always, you know, don't worry so much about the safety net. You know, don't just take crazy risks. You know, you want to try to hedge your bets as you do things. Like, when I left my full-time job, I didn't just quit and then go out and start freelancing. You know, I found some freelance gigs as I moved towards leaving my full-time job. And I did those on nights and weekends, and kind of made that transition easier. So, you know, I think, all that said, like, maybe consulting with others is probably a good way to be honest with yourself about how you feel about what you want to do with your career, and talk to others, get some outside perspective on it, people you think you can trust, because they may be able to give you some guidance and see blind spots that you're not aware of.
I think one of the things I wish I had done that I did not do was talk to people up and down the stack at different stages of their career. And so some that were just a level or two above, and then some which might have been at a more aspirational level for me. Because to your point, I think what you're trying to accomplish does change in time. And it would have been interesting to sort of hear the different perspectives of where people were and where they ended up. So right now, for example, for me, I care much more about time than I did before, you know, time for myself. I think in my early career, I spent all of my time working. And if you asked me to do that now, I'd be like, no, that's not how I want to live my life today. And at the time I did it, it was fine. And as to your point, I had different goals. I had different things I was trying to do. And now I'm in a very different place. So it would be really interesting if anything would have changed if I had gone back and actually had those interviews. Maybe it would have, maybe it wouldn't have, but I think it would have been interesting just to know that different perspectives exist, which I didn't fully appreciate until getting to this point in my life and career where I can say, oh, you know, sometimes you're more motivated by family or travel or career growth or, you know, there's all kinds of different things. So, yeah. But we've entered that point. The bonus question. Is there a book, a podcast, an activity, or a place you'd like to recommend to the audience?
I will go with an activity because one of my resolutions for 2022 is to start journaling, and it's been a game changer for me. Mm-hmm. So if you haven't ever done journaling, you know, talking about some of these concepts like the one thing, thinking about what your priorities are each day, being able to track maybe certain patterns in your day. All these things have been really possible with journaling. And when I say journaling, I'm not talking about like pulling out Evernote and typing it on your computer. I'm talking about like real pen and paper. Buy a journal, you know, off Amazon and start writing. It's like it uses a different part of your brain, and it's become like a really like therapeutic exercise for me just to kind of reflect on my day. And when I'm really frustrated, I can just take it out of my journal and that ink. I'm just writing as hard as I can on the paper because I'm, you know, ticked off. And then next day I'm happy and feeling creative. And, you know, it's nice to be able to see that, you know, and let's think it's on paper. So it's there forever, right? As long as you don't lose the journal. So I go back and look at that all the time. So I love journaling, big advocate of it. Those of you that have considered it or have never done it before, I'd strongly recommend, you know, checking out and seeing if that's maybe something you can adapt within your life to help improve things.
Yeah, I love that concept. And frankly, I love paper. So even with all the great digital, I'm one of those gals that likes notebooks and paper and pens and all those sort of things.
You know, the coolest thing is like, I hardly ever go in the bank, but I can remember like the times I'd go in the bank and have to go write the little deposit slip out and be like, man, I'm having to use a pen. I don't remember how to do this. Like you're writing a check because someone only takes a check and you're like, I got to remember how to write. I haven't written in like 4 weeks. And then now it's like I'm doing it every day. And it just, yeah, it feels good.
It's a good connection. Sometimes I think bridging, it's a very physical thing, right? You've got the tactile feel of the paper. It's also a very focused thing where sometimes I think we have learned how to multitask too much on our electronic devices. So it's like you're talking to somebody, you're writing something else, you're doing a third thing. And journaling is one of those things. You can't be typing and journaling at the same time. So I'm with you on that. That's great.
Yes.
Well, Dustin, thanks for your time and your insight. And I look forward to seeing you in person someday in Austin.
Yeah, sounds great. Let me know when you're ever down here.
All right. Cheers.
All right. Take care.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please visit reimaginehybridwork.com to subscribe to the show and the newsletter. Until next time, wishing you all of the best in everything in life and in technology.